Okay, right. Thank you very much, Emma, Stuart and Julie. And now we have two papers for the session before lunch. And we'll start off with Carrie Childs. Carrie.
Hi, I'm Carrie Childs. It's obviously a secret where I'm based because I've not put it on my slides. I'm based at the University of Derby. And so I'm going to be talking to you about some work that I've been doing looking at police interviews with children reporting alleged sexual offences. In particular today I'm going to be looking at the closure phase of the interview. I'm going to be talking to you about the guidance that's given to police officers and how that is a complete departure from what actually happens in the interviews. So there's an overview here for those of you that like to see what's going to happen. Within the analysis, I'm going to look at questions that the police officers ask to encourage the children to provide more information. So they'll say, is there anything more that you wish that you want to talk about today? What I'll do, I'll show you how the role of that is actually in closing the interview rather than actually a genuine invitation for more information. I'll also look at how police officers do encourage the interviewees to provide further information outside of the closure phase. So this is the phenomena that I'm going to be focusing on today. So I've called this the additional business question. So here's this quote there's taken from Achieving Best Evidence in Criminal Proceedings. So this is like the Bible that the police officers use, a guide for carrying out their interviews. It's not legally enforceable, but any major departures might need to be justified in court. So this is what they're told that they need to do when they're closing the interview. They have to thank the witness for the time and their effort, ask them if there's anything more that they wish to communicate. They should explain what will happen next. The witness should be asked if they have any questions, and these should be answered as appropriately as possible. Now, you guys as conversation analysts might be able to see that there's something here that doesn't quite add up. So we're telling the officers to close the interview, and at the same time, we're telling them to initiate a new topic. So here's some examples of what this looks like. Is there anything else that you want to tell me? All right, thank you. I've got another questions at this time. Is there anything else that you think I need to know at this time? All right, listen, I haven't got any more questions to ask you. Is there anything else that you want to say? And I've called this the additional business question. So the general consensus then is reflected in the guidance that's given and also in the academic literature on interviewing is that the closure phase of the interview is an appropriate environment to make sure that the child has said everything that they have to say and to answer any unresolved questions. However, it's paradoxical. It fails to take into account what participants are actually doing. And when we ask these kinds of questions, I will show you, the action that's being done is to close the conversation down. So the question actually literally, hearably interrupts the flow of information. So these recommendations then, they're based on these common sense ideas. So just a very brief overview of some of the CA literature on closing encounters. So Shergloff and Saxon, they talk about the closing problem. So when we're bringing a conversation to a close, we have to do so in a way that's recognisable. If another person doesn't continue, they're not ignoring them, it's because the conversation has come to a close. So participants in a conversation bring a number of mentionables. And what we have to do when we're closing an interaction is to check for the presence of unmentioned mentionables. And that is what the additional business question is doing in my materials. So there's these steps that we go through when we're closing a conversation. So we will establish a closing relevant environment. We'll start to wind things down. We'll then check for the presence of mentionables by a possible pre-closing. And then we end the conversation with a terminal exchange. And I will show you that quite clearly, the additional business question, it's a routine step, so it's a way of checking for the presence of unmentioned mentionables. So this will become relevant for the analysis. So there's been work in CA which has looked at closing encounters. So Robinson, he looks at doctor-patient interaction, and he looks at two practices that doctors use for closing those interactions. So there's the future arrangement sequence. So this is referring to something that will happen following the GP's visit, so filling your prescription or so on. And the final concern pre-closing sequence. So this is similar to the additional business question in my materials. And what he found is that they're designed in ways that discourage the patients from adding further information. Park has also looked at some Korean medical visits, so they are under lots of pressure to get patients in and out quickly in those visits. So she looks at the closing of those, and she looks at when the physicians ask these questions, any other concerns to discuss today. They will do things like they will gaze away, they will start to mess around with a computer, and they will disengage to discourage the patient from voicing an additional concern. And then the canonical paper, which most of you will be familiar with, and you will see that this is relevant for the analysis. So Heritage and colleagues, they looked at how in primary care visits, physicians solicit additional concerns, and if we use the question, any other concerns today, that expects a no response, whereas if we use a some question, that expects a yes response. And they design that intervention, and the patients are much more likely to raise additional concerns with the some question because of preference organisation. So my data then, today I'm looking at 27 videos, so it was alleged sexual abuse cases. Did anonymise all of the interviews on police premises. Because of that, I wasn't able to capture any of the intonation or the features of how words and places and so on were said. I also don't have permission to play the data today, unfortunately. So I found 56 candidate examples of the additional business question within my data. So of the 27 of the closings that I looked at, 21 of these were initiated using the additional business question. In 7 of these, the child did opt to ask a question or to add something. I will show you what that looks like. In 14 of them, they opted not to. So what it does, this question, it allows the officers and the interviewees to establish and collaborate in establishing this closing relevant environment. So when they acknowledge, the interviewees acknowledge that there's nothing to add, they can then bring the conversation to a close. So here is the first extract. So there's just part of the extract on the screen, but you've got all of the extracts on your handouts. So we have a question answer sequence being brought to a close. Okay, what is it then? It's just normal. Then at lines 8 to 9, the police officer begins to establish this closing relevant environment. So he gestures with his hands and his notes. He does this boundary marker with right, that's it. And he nods at the child, and then this, I can't think of anything else I want to clarify. He gazes at, there's a social worker present there. So that's directed at the social worker. The social worker comes in and confirms with no, there's nothing else. With you, and then at line 17, he re-includes the child as an addressee. With you, is there anything you want to tell me? So you can see that the question, it's built using this any format. We've established a closing relevant environment. There's also a drop-in pitch with you want to tell me, which characterises it as a sequence closing sequence. The child then says at line 19, and she smiles. Before she's had a chance to formulate a response, the police officer then closes his notebook, so by implication, we're done here. Then she says no as he's doing that. At line 21, he seeks reconfirmation of the no. What's quite interesting, and this wasn't the only example where I saw this happening, he seeks this reconfirmation. The reconfirmation isn't forthcoming, so she doesn't orient to that at all. But he carries on as if that had been forthcoming. So it's, then there's, okay, great, I'm not going to ask you any further questions, we've finished. So you can see then quite clearly that the question is produced by officers and it's treated by children as a way of bringing the conversation to a close. So there's another example so that you can see this play out again. So there's been a question and answer sequence where the police officer has been asking the child why her friends didn't initially believe her when she told them about the alleged offence. Then at line 16 we have MK, so we have this boundary marker, and then I've got no further questions for you. So that's establishing this closing relevant environment. Is there anything you want to say to me? The child then, she says no at line 19, quite quietly. She's shaking her head and she's playing with her hair. Again, the police officer seeks reconfirmation of this with no at line 21. She doesn't orient to this, so she just carries on playing with her hair. But he acts as if that reconfirmation had been forthcoming. He then leans forward and puts his notes on the table. And all right, so we'll bring the interview to a close, so I just need to say what time it is. The time by my watch is 2:29 p.m. So you can see there, again, another example of how the role of that question is in interview closing. However, in seven examples, the child does opt to add something or to ask a question. So I'll show you what that looks like, and it's an alternative pattern of closing. So, police officer, so he provides praise at line 8, you should be proud of yourself, you've done really well. Alright, I haven't got any more questions to ask you. Is there anything else you want to say? He starts flicking through his notebook just after he's asked this question, so again he's disengaging from the interviewee. At line 15, the child, she does opt to ask a question. So there's one thing, so this question projection, it orients to it as an accountable matter and there's just going to be one question. And how long could he be locked up for? Now it is it's noticeable that it isn't anything that adds more information, it's a question that refers to things that are going to be happening after the interview, so it orients to closing the interaction. The police officer, he carries on flicking through his notebook, so he's physically disengaged from her. He says, I don't know about that. And as he's doing so, he closes his notebook. So again, the interview's complete then. And then he says at line 20, how long is he going to be, do you mean? Lines 22 to 23. I don't know. That's something that would be decided if it went to court. And then I'll speak to you about that in a bit. So this is an example of a future arrangement. So it's something that's going to be happening after the interview. So it's orienting to closing. And then he closes the interview at lines 27 to 28. So you can see then that the question that she asks, it refers to something that's going to be happening after the interview, so it orients to closing, and the process and the actions that are being done are clearly to bring the interview to a close. There are examples, so there was these 21 examples taken from interview closing. There are examples where police officers do encourage the interviewees to provide further information as they are going through through the course of the interview. So I found 35 examples of this. Some police officers did this quite a lot, some police officers not so much. And these are typically delivered at activity boundaries. So during the questioning phase of the interviews, they have to divide things into manageable topics. So if it was multiple incidents, for example, they might discuss one incident and then move on to another. So typically they would ask these kinds of questions at the end of one of these topics. So there's more relaxed boundaries here. So it did provide the opportunity, and the action that was being done was clearly to encourage the interviewees to provide more information. So there's some examples here. So anything else you can think of while I do that? So the police officer there, he says, I'll just check my notes to make sure that there isn't anything that we've missed. And is there anything that we've not talked about that you think might be important at the moment? So here's an example of this. So we have, okay, did he do anything else to you? So the police officer, that she's reported a particular incident, she's probing for further information about this particular incident. The child says no. Then there's a pursuit of this at line 8 with, are you sure? The child confirms this. At line 10, the police officer provides an account for this, so he's a bit hesitant there. Then at lines 13 to 15, she issues a directive. So we want you to tell us everything. If you just tell us everything, then it's all been said then, hasn't it? And that puts a positive a gloss on that. Then at lines 19 to 20, yeah, is there anything else you want to tell us about? No. Is there anything else happened that you don't want to tell us about? So you can see then that clearly the action that is being done, it's a genuine invitation for more information. And another example, so this is, they have spoken about the particular incidents and things are starting to wind down. So the police officer at line 1, can you think of anything I've spoke to you about that you perhaps expected me to ask you? What she doesn't do here, she doesn't establish this closing and relevant environment beforehand. That you perhaps expected me to ask you. So it exceeds epistemic authority to the child and his expectations. The child then, so there's lots of space here while he's, you know, there's this he's gazing and looking up. And then, I don't know really, I hope this isn't being nosy or anything. So he's orienting to this being a type of question that perhaps he shouldn't be asking. Because maybe he is being a bit nosy, but he's asking it nevertheless. And do you know what's going to happen to Grandad or anything? So similarly to the other example, this refers to something that will happen after the interview, and it is a question that the police officer is not able to answer. But the way in which the officer manages this is quite different. So I don't personally know because it's not my decision, it's someone else's decision. We'll take on board what you're saying. And you don't want to go to prison. And you would understand and accept if he was punished in some way, but not by going to prison. So there's a space here where the police officer explains, gives an account for why she can't answer that. And then we'll take on board what you want. And then at lines 36 to 37, she then initiates another question-answer sequence. So you've not seen Grandad since Christmas Day. How do you feel about that? And then there is a further discussion there. So you can see then that the way in which that the police officer wasn't able to answer that question, but the way in which that is managed is quite different. And the action that is being done, it was a genuine invitation for more information. So then, in sum, if practitioners do want to encourage interviewees to provide further information during the closure phase of interviews, and actually from speaking to some practitioners, they know that that's not what they're doing there. I've spoken to some that said that they don't ask this question at all, and I've spoken to some that say that, you know, they're aware that they might not want them to bring further information. Because the courts like the videos to be quite short, so there's a tension there as well. So they're actually aware, police officers themselves, that this isn't what they're doing. But if they do want to encourage this, they should pause other things that they're doing, so avoid disengaging from the interviewee, from looking at notes, and so on. Be aware of their notes as a way of organising the interaction. So closing the notebook implies that, you know, we're done here. They should avoid designing questions and in ways that are biased for a no response, so using those some type formats. And they should avoid doing this, you know, establishing a closing relevant environment. So avoid formulating the question as the last question or the last topic of the encounter. However, interviewees, they should be given the opportunity to add further information throughout the course of the interview. So then, the best practice guidelines, they could be improved with better understanding of actual interaction between officers and interviewees. Also, my sample, it was children reporting alleged sexual offences, but it's worth noting that similar guidance is given in other types of interviews, so with victims and suspects and so on. So it is likely that this is relevant to those settings as well.
Thank you. Great, thanks, Carrie. So time for questions, observations, comments. Yes, Julie.
I had one about the flicking through the notebook. And you were saying that this was to do with disengaging. My sense of that is, and a later one, you talked about closing the notebook. Because of how the kind of response the flicking through provoked, I was thinking maybe flicking through is a change of phase of the interview, but not to closure.
Okay,
flicking
yeah.
through is like a reviewing action. And that's demonstrated in the fact that that then elicited a kind of reflective question. How long will they get for this? So it's another form of engage. To review something is another form of engagement of the same topic.
Yeah.
And gives the opportunity for someone to reflect, basically, and to think, well, what does this mean? Rather than, this is over. And I think that's reflected in the response that was obtained to the flicking.
Yes, it's not quite that I'm done with you now.
That's
it's
it.
There may be.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Andrew.
Tiny clarification question. I noticed your police officer saying something to the effect of, we take on board what you would want.
Yeah.
Is that something that they can do, or was that not a sayable thing?
The guidance that they're given is that they can't make promises that can't be kept. So I guess,
Presumably, once it's into the court, does it matter for the process doesn't matter what the child wants, does it?
Yeah, and that's a good point. Yeah, and I think quite often it can be quite difficult looking at the guidance that's given to know what kinds of things they can and can't do. So they're told not to provide praise as well, and you see examples
of
that.
These things at the end are these things that the child wants to raise up that are likely to be more difficult things than just simple fact-stating things. So one was about not wanting granddad to go to prison, and how long is somebody else going to be in prison?
Yeah.
So there are awkward places to, if you do get a response, then you've got to be in a position to have to deal with that.
Yes, Becky.
I should be.
The interesting thing was, but I'm really sorry I can't remember the findings very accurately, but there were certain ways of phrasing it where the patients understood it as either a new problem or a non-new problem. So they would respond in the sort of ways of, not really, but, and then say something. So it might be a useful resource for you to look at.
Yeah.
And I also wondered if there's a slight difference between the questions of, is there anything you want to tell us rather than say?
Yeah. So if you have more cases, it might be interesting to hear any subtle differences between those as well. Yeah, and that, is there anything that you want to say to me? That struck me as a really odd way to ask that question. It wasn't usually how it's asked, because is there anything that you want to say to me? It's like you're being told off, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just really interested by the sort of, I suppose, the relationship between the position of that question and then the tone design of the question, and whether the tilt towards any might have less impact on whether somebody reveals something additional if it's not done in that closing environment.
Yeah.
Do you think that is consistently the case? Or
yeah, and I think that overwhelmingly, even outside of interview closure, they're asked using any. I think I only had one example of a question that was asked using some. So I think it's more about the environment rather than the grammatical design.
Yes, Lucas.
So I thought it might be a discrepancy between how the question is understood by the children as opposed to how the question is, well, not designed, but how it's meant to be understood, if you can call it that. So if you look at secondary care, patients or clinicians will still ask the question, is there anything else? And in my day, at least consistently, patients will have additional questions, and the patient's going to take another 5 or 10 minutes. So these questions never go towards no, at least aren't taken as no. And that's, I think, maybe because patients know by that point they're used to these kinds of questions, so they know what kind of questions, what they're aiming for. Whereas in this case, children might not be familiar with the question, probably aren't familiar with the question, so there's a discrepancy between what the interviewer wants from the child as opposed to what the child maybe thinks the question is about. And that's why you maybe also the types of answers where it is, where there is uptake. It's not about new information, but it's about what's going to happen to ground that after this thing. So they think about the questions differently than what they're actually aiming.
Yeah. Whereas routinely in doctor-patient interaction, you expect that. And
I think in doctor, at least in secondary care, primary care is going to be different. But I think there the patients understand that it's about now I get to ask the question.
Yeah.
Now I get more information. Whereas for children, they don't. They're not sure what they're being asked to address, basically. So then it's like, what am I supposed to answer? And then maybe you get a whole different types of information.
Yeah.
I think you had that with that no, with the rising intonation, the child said no.
Mm.
You see, they're like, is that the right answer?
Yes.
I just want to say, in our voice studies looked at interactions with people with dementia, and we've published a paper on the closings. And the doctor's question, is there anything else, doesn't work with these patients. Well, some of the patients explicitly ask what they mean by that, what sorts of things should they say. So I just wondered, I assume you would have mentioned it, but did any of the children explicitly query the question?
No examples of that. Interesting.
Good. Thank you, Karen.